You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC, located on the unceded traditional Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam people. Hello, and welcome to Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective. This radio show is presented every 4 weeks, where we dig into topics about gender, race, and social justice. We open our show with a conversation between your hosts, followed by an interview with an expert on the topic that we will be discussing.
Welcome to this special episode of Intersections. My name is Randy, your host. Today we are going to be talking about multi-level marketing schemes, or MLMs, also known and commonly referred to as pyramid schemes, and their use of girl boss feminism and, quote, sisterhood to attract women to their companies. We are also going to discuss how this use of girl boss feminism and sisterhood harms the women that predominantly make up the base of sellers within multi-level marketing schemes. Today is a special episode because this week, unlike others, we do not have a special expert guest to discuss this topic with us. Instead, we have a wonderful discussion with two special guests from CITR. But we'll come to that later. First, I want to get started with a conversation about some facts regarding girl boss feminism and MLMs. First, let's start off our conversation discussing what is a multi-level marketing scheme or an MLM. MLMs are pyramid schemes that function to make money through two different streams of income. That is, selling products and recruiting new sellers. You have probably seen many memes describing the process of what happens when you join an MLM, where you get recruited and then you recruit a few more people and then those people recruit a few more people until, if you were to draw this out, you would end up with a pyramid structure, hence the name. There are a couple of key components that separate an MLM from a traditional business selling a product or service. Number one, the product or service will not be found in a regular store. It can only be bought from the distributor or salesperson who is promoting the product for the MLM. The second is the way people are compensated for the work that they do for the MLM. This happens in two ways. The first is a payout based on the amount of product or service that you sell as a distributor. The second key component to an MLM, and what makes an MLM a pyramid scheme, is the compensation that you as a distributor make off of the amount of wholesale products of those people that you recruited to be distributors purchase. This forms the basic idea of why it is a pyramid structure that makes up an MLM. MLMs are controversial business practices because recruits are promised to make a lot of money very easily and very quickly. However, the major reason they acquire wealth in the scheme is through recruitment and not through selling the product or service. This means that people are forced to often exploit relationships in their life in the hopes of recruiting new distributors so that they can make money from the wholesale products that they buy. This brings us to the strong relationship between hashtag girlbossfeminism and MLMs. Now we get to talk about everybody's favorite pastime from the 2010s, hashtag girlbossfeminism. First, it is important to understand that although MLMs recruit and work for many different people, women comprise the majority populace that work in MLMs. According to a Washington Post article from 2019, quote, 18.6 million Americans are involved in direct sales, and a staggering 74% are women, end quote. Similar to MLMs, many people are aware of what is meant by the term girl boss, or its relative, boss babe. Both of these become synonymous with the image of white women in their late 20s becoming financially successful. They are linked with the idea of success being achieved through accumulating material wealth. It is clear to see from this idea of what girl boss feminism is that it's intrinsically linked with the ideas of capitalism and success. This is further supported in a Vox article titled Gaslight, Gatekeep, Girl Boss Meaning. This is a quote taken from that article. Quote, The girl boss is one of the cruelest tricks capitalism ever perpetuated. Born in the mid-2000s, she was simultaneously a power fantasy and a utopian promise. As a female business leader, be she a CEO, an aspiring CEO, or an independent MLM superseller, the girl boss was going to unapologetically will empires from the rubble of rejections and underestimation she faced all her life. As companies grew in her image, so did her mythos. Her legacy would be grand and fair because equality was coming to work. Everyone was supposed to win when girl bosses won. End quote. As many of us know from being on the internet around this time, we can acknowledge that the promise of the girl boss did not come true. It became a movement that was only achievable for a very select few people that attempted. To provide more explanation on hashtag girl boss and hashtag boss babe, I want to turn to one of my favorite YouTubers, Madison Harnish. Her channel is called Cruel World Happy Mind, and this is taken from a video where she discusses the downfall of girl boss.
The term girl boss was first brought into the public eye in 2014. The term was used in popular books written by women CEOs, like hashtag girl boss by Sophia Amoruso, founder of Nasty Gal, and Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, COO of Facebook. Sheryl Sandberg argued in her book Lean In that more women gaining power in the workplace and becoming executives would help create more equality. And thus, the girl boss was born. The problem is, women executives can be just as exploitative as male executives. Surprise, surprise, equality. We all aren't that different after all.
We all are equally terrible.
And the reality is, girl boss is just hustle culture repackaged and resold to women.
Hustle culture is yet another primarily millennial toxic ideology that if you relentlessly work or grind, and also relentlessly post on social media about your hashtag hustle, hashtag grind, that you are indeed the superior millennial. I personally think there's many flavors of hustle culture. From my favorite, and that which I have the most experience with, there's the startup hustle culture that features eccentric startup founders bragging about how much they work and encouraging their employees to work 12 plus hours a day. If you go into any WeWork, you'll see plenty of hustle culture memorabilia. There's also the frat bro or stock bro hustle culture that emphasizes obtaining material goods is a little too inspired by Wolf of Wall Street and random rise and grind Instagram accounts. And from personal experience, I found most of these dudes post about hustling more than they actually hustle. In fact, I don't think they've had to actually hustle a day in their life, but maybe that's just me. Then there's the girl boss culture, which is like any other capitalist girl thing, all about materialism, surrounding yourself with books and podcasts, and buying from girl boss companies and monetarily supporting all girl boss things. But more on that later.
Much of the narrative surrounding girl boss is to work hard and hustle and make something of yourself and build a career. Be the girl boss. Do the work.
As Madison points out in the video, girl boss is inherently flawed. It's just the repackaging of an already toxic idea of hustle culture. Now, for the purpose of this episode, I'm not going to go into girl boss feminism more than this. But if you are interested, I encourage you to check out this video on her channel. Hashtag girl boss feminism could be an episode of its own, with its connection to classism, racism, and all-around pro-capitalist rhetoric. But for this episode, I am uniquely interested in the ideas of girl boss feminism and how they are used to recruit women to MLMs. So let's dive into the conversation of what relates girl boss feminism and MLMs. When the discussion of the harm of MLMs arises, they often focus on the financial costs. But what is the social cost for people, specifically the women involved in MLMs? In a Washington Post article titled, How MLMs Are Hurting Female Friendships, they bring up the idea of how building a downline of distributors, what I have described previously in the video of recruiting new members, this process of creating a downline leads distributors to attempt to recruit any person that they have known in their lifetime. This could be old college friends, roommates, friends from high school, and all those in between. While the process of recruiting people is not inherently menacing, it is when those who are being recruited are not told up front about what is happening. This comes from the article. Quote, today, not all sellers are being upfront about their MLM involvement. That coffee with a friend or girls' night is, surprise, not just for fun. It is about making a sale or recruitment. I thought I had made a genuine connection with a mom I met online in a mom group, said Erin Hager from Kansas. But after Hager declined this mom's offer to become a Beachbody coach, the woman stopped talking to her. It hurt, Hager said. I even invited her and her kiddo to my son's first birthday party. I felt like an idiot for thinking we were friends. End quote. This alienation of women who already feel alone or separate due to parental care or other responsibilities harms them. This is one way that MLMs harm female friendships, through creating false pretenses for the relationships that women get themselves into, all as a guise for recruiting new members for an MLM. Further, the use of boss babe rhetoric can be very appealing for women who are stay-at-home moms or are not receiving success at work due to industry gender discrimination or the pay gap. As also mentioned in the same Washington Post article, quote, MLMs exploit many fault lines around women and the economy. Women remain underpaid in the workplace and undervalued as stay-at-home mothers. MLMs promise instant success, camaraderie with other women in a, quote, team environment, and career identity, trappings that standard jobs typically require years to develop, end quote. To have the promise of sisterhood and the ability to make lots of money on your own schedule in your own home becomes very appealing to women. After all, who doesn't want to be their own boss? The hashtag girlboss and hashtag bossbabe work in unison to alienate and recruit women to be a part of a scam that ruins their friendships and family relationships, all in the hopes of having it all. Even though it is next to impossible to succeed in MLMs when it is proven that less than 1% of people make a profit from MLMs. Truly, only the people at the top of the pyramid are benefiting from the sales of products or services and also the recruitment of new distributors. For more on how the MLMs target mothers as part of this promise of empowerment and sisterhood, the same YouTuber I mentioned earlier, Madison, describes the harm of this practice in one of her videos, quote, how MLMs target moms and ruin female friendships.
It's strange to me because most of these posts are moms targeting other moms. Since they're similar and they've dealt with similar things, they know exactly how to prey on other mothers' emotions, how to hit them where it hurts, and how to make them feel guilty and rope them in to this business opportunity. They know exactly what to say to make a mom feel like signing up for an MLM is the best thing that they could do for their children, when in reality, it's really not. But an important distinction that I think needs to be made in the anti-MLM community is that MLM distributors that are targeting vulnerable mothers are vulnerable mothers themselves that have been targeted. They themselves truly believe that MLMs are the best things for their family and their children because they were convinced when they were vulnerable in the exact same way that they're trying to convince others. Familiar with from my own personal studies with marketing, there's a few different types of people, but the main two sectors of people are those that value logic over emotions and those that value emotions over logic. People that are very easily influenced into making a purchasing decision or a life decision based off of emotions and will at times completely ignore logic if their emotions are strong enough. And this marketer says, MLMs firmly target the emotions over logic camp. Does it matter that they're not actually a business owner, that they're not actually an entrepreneur, that they don't know how to evaluate profit and loss, that they don't know what the word profit actually means, that they don't know anything about how to analyze if a product or service is competitive, and that their entire customer model is flawed? No, because their emotions have been manipulated to drown out all of that with vague information, promises of success, and leveraging their emotions and insecurities against them. You don't need negativity in your life, hun. They're just haters. I think that this is a very, very important distinction to make because emotions influence us and they influence how we act. If we feel such a strong emotion, like love for our children, love for our family, which is the strongest emotion that a mother can feel,
if we feel that emotion and someone plays with that emotion, they prey on that emotion, they rope us in with that emotion of love for our family and make us feel that if we join this MLM, we'll be doing what's best for the people. That will trump all logic. That will trump what anyone else can say, because these women love their family and they are convinced that what they're doing will be best for their family. Even further, if they truly believe this, then their actions can be manipulated, because at the end, they're doing this for their family. So they will do whatever it takes.
Madison further connects the idea of how these MLMs target women, and specifically mothers, to the situation of being in a toxic friendships. And this is a good example of what is happening. The idea that there is only one way to be a good mother or a good partner, etc., targets people's vulnerability and desires to be well-liked, and in the end, all they are doing is destroying potential friendships and relationships with women that are already feeling lonely. Hashtag Girl Boss Feminism was set up to fail in the first place. How can we expect a woman CEO functioning inside of the same exploitative system of capitalism to be any better than a male in the same position? Leigh Stein argues this point in a Vox article about girl boss feminism. She further states that expecting these women to solve the world's problems is misguided. The systems remain the same no matter who is in charge. That is perhaps what is most insidious to me about the connection between girl boss feminism and MLMs. In the work of convincing these women through false promises of success and sisterhood, when similar to the hashtag girl boss CEO, the hashtag girl boss MLM distributor is also doomed to fail from the start. I want to finish out this part of the episode with a message from Madison Harnish about the work that we need to do in recognizing who needs to be held responsible for the actions and harm done by MLMs and their distributors.
I've been reflecting on some of the ways that I have been reacting to the posts made by MLM representatives. I think that there's a really negative tone, not only against these MLM companies, but against the women in these MLM companies. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. I feel like it's important to bring these shady practices and unethical posts and comments to light. I really do. But I don't think it's going to create any real or positive change unless we change our approach. And here's why. These women are us. We are on the same team. We are working towards the same cause. 90% of my audience is women. And while I appreciate and love the 10% men who are watching my channel and do think that you guys can help with this cause too, I also want to point out the irony in these analytics. The anti-MLM community and the MLM community have much of the same people within them. We are on the same team. These women are not evil or malicious. Well, most of them. Most MLM representatives are just vulnerable people who have been targeted and have had their emotions manipulated and used against them. Most people in MLMs are women very similar to those that watch my channel, who have just been convinced that MLMs are the best solution out there to their problems. And they've been taught that they have to act a certain way and have been submersed in a culture where acting predatory and aggressive is accepted and encouraged.
On that note, I want to close out part one of this episode. I hope you stay tuned for the discussion that will be coming next.
The haunting debut album Black Moon by Civic TV provides a cinematic backdrop, a modern-day symphony of the dark and light that is our collective reality. Take a listen to Black Moon, now available via Flemish Eye Records and on all streaming platforms.
Now the patriarchy is dead, and we killed it. If you identify as a woman, femme, trans, or non-binary, CITR wants you on the air. You can talk about literally whatever you want as long as you care about it. No worries if you have no experience, we'll train you in everything you need to know. Come by CITR and say hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Hello.
From 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday to help us never play Led Zeppelin on CITR 101.9 FM ever again. I could be you.
Hello, and welcome back to Intersections. I'm joined by two special guests today from the studio that are going to be discussing further this topic of MLMs, friendships, and harm to women.
Hi, everybody who's listening. I am Hannah. I'm the spoken word coordinator at CADR. And yeah, thanks, Randy, for inviting me to talk about one of my favorite topics to rant about.
Hi, I'm Violet. I'm very excited for the conversation we'll be having today about MLMs and girl bosses. I'm a spoken word student exec at CITR, and I'm excited to have this little combo.
Awesome. Well, I think we should dive right in. So the first thing that I want to talk about is just kind of our general understandings of MLMs. I feel like wherever you grow up, like the people you're surrounded with impacts how you view them. I grew up in a small town, so I had like a lot of exposure to MLMs. I think as soon as I got my Facebook account at like 13, I was invited to join various MLMs. So I just want to talk a bit about our own experiences with them.
Yeah, I had always heard the term pyramid scheme first. I hadn't really heard the term MLM until much later on, I would say. And I was a bit confused about why the terminology seemed to be switching. But I was kind of looking into it and learning about how pyramid schemes are illegal. and so MLMs are kind of this like loophole of having an organization or a company that is quote unquote legal, even though it has a very, very similar structure to what a pyramid scheme actually is. I wouldn't say I got any requests to join as young as 13, but definitely in like more so high school, I just had some like random people as friends on Facebook, because that was a thing you did in middle school, is you just tried to get as many Facebook friends as you could. So it was usually just randos reaching out to me. Hey, girly, we think you'd be perfect for this. And telling me a little bit about the product. I don't think I ever responded. I was never very tempted by that. I was like, I don't know, I'm in high school. I don't really need to be selling this product.
Yeah, similar to what Violet said, I definitely had heard of pyramid scheme a lot, and I would confuse or use MLMs and pyramid schemes interchangeably, but I did also look up the difference, and it is, yes, Violet said before that pyramid schemes are illegal and MLMs are legal, quote unquote. But also apparently pyramid scheme have no products. It's just the idea that it's like, it's rooted in just recruitment, and that's how you make money. But MLMs do have legit products that they're selling, like beat skincare or weight loss products and stuff like that. My exposure, I'd say, to MLMs was through, my only exposure to MLMs was through my mom's friend. I grew up in the Middle East, and she moved to Canada, I think, when I was like 8 or 9, and her kids were like our age, and so they were young too, and she started working for Avon, and I remember like when she used to visit us, she would talk about like how great the gig is and all the cool stuff that she gets for free. And like I remember she would remember going to her place, and she would like show us all the jewelry and all like the skincare products, and like I remember just being so impressed and being like, this is so cool, why isn't my mom doing something like this and getting me all this cool jewelry, you know? And I think she definitely made it to the middle of the hierarchy, and she was such a committed Avon lady. Like you would just talk to her and somehow Avon would slip in the convo. And I didn't realize until much later that Avon is like one of the biggest MLMs globally, right? And it doesn't have stores where they place their products. But anyway, the point of the story is that much later I realized the truth of MLMs and like how exploitative they can be, and it's not that charming. But I will say though, like looking back on that anecdote, I can see the appeal in my aunt's case, especially. She became so lonely when she moved to Canada with her kids. Her husband was back working in the Middle East, and it was just a way for her to find community. For some reason, a lot of brown women ended up working for Avon, and a lot of stay-at-home moms. And so she would talk about like how she was making friends, how she would be going to these lunches with these women, and just like we can debate if it's empowerment or it's the idea of empowerment, but it's interesting to just think that. Yeah, like if you're lonely, and especially just being, you're already trying to raise kids and not working, and in a new strange country, and like what do you do? So I can totally see how it can be so easy to kind of get into something like this.
Yeah, I liked what you said about how you didn't realize that it was like an MLM till later. Because that was very similar to me. There were so many people, like my mom's friends or just like people that I knew in my town that were Arbonne like sellers. And I, for the longest time, just thought that Arbonne, like I didn't connect it to being, and same with Tupperware. It took me forever to connect all of these things to being like MLMs. So I feel like the way that they're just like so, because they would be, you know, at the farmer's market in town, or they would be, or like it would just be like my mom's friend and I'd be like, oh, we're going to a party. So it's interesting that like you don't right away make that connection. So I just want to throw out this fact and then have a little bit of a conversation about it. So all the studies that I've ever read, all the research that I found, says that less than 1% of people in MLMs make a profit. So this does, a lot of the research does come out of the States. That's like the main studied area, but I think it could be pretty directly applied to Canada. So I just want to know what we all think about that fact, because I feel like it's kind of startling.
Oh yeah, it's totally startling. And Henna, you mentioned about talking about whether it is empowering or just the idea of empowerment. And I think that statistic really goes to show that perhaps it's more just the idea of empowerment. And when I was kind of looking into it, I was hearing this buzzword thrown out a lot of financial freedom. And that's like a huge selling point for these MLMs, where you can achieve financial freedom. And in a capitalist society where people are really struggling financially and they're being sold this beautiful picture of, you know, be your own boss and, you know, have financial freedom and go on vacations and have all these luxury things that are really promoted, especially through social media. I think that's very attractive, especially when people are struggling financially, and especially as women who traditionally haven't been the quote unquote breadwinners in their family and haven't had that opportunity and maybe aren't even respected when they do try and enter the workforce. It seems like such a great alternative, but they don't realize that it's extremely hard to sell these products and you have to really rely on your network, which ultimately is limited, and rising the ranks. As much as you might have speakers at like the indoctrinating conferences or whatever that you go to that have really made it, it's incredibly hard to reach the level that those people have reached in this multi-level marketing company.
Yeah, the stats you just quoted, Randy, is very jarring, but I totally, totally believe it. I was reading somewhere that during the pandemic, MLM orgs blew up because people were losing jobs, and the MLMs thought, oh, let's use this weakness to our advantage and as a recruitment tool, right? Like, hey, here's this paradise of be your own boss. And lifestyle transformation, and and stuff like that, which obviously is a farce. And also just, it's interesting because I was just thinking that MLMs have existed for like, I don't know, decades and decades. Because I remember when I was like really young and internet wasn't a big thing, I would watch infomercials on TV. And there were like these long ass infomercials of like people talking about how this weight loss product transformed their life and things like that. And it just kind of seeps in your brain, right? And you can't help but think it's real. And it's just the idea, or not even the idea, I think for MLMs to succeed, someone has to be taken advantage of, someone has to be exploited. Like, that's it. You know, that's how capitalism works and that's how MLMs work. And it's folks at the bottom who are going to be preyed upon. That's it. Like, it's as simple as that. Because I feel like we always hear the success stories, like, oh, hashtag girl boss made it to the top tier. But what about the people at the bottom who are probably bankrupt trying to buy their own products? And so that's why the 1% profit is very real and very scary.
Yeah, I think it's quite representative of capitalism as a whole. And I kind of picture it as people stepping on the people below them to rise above, because they don't want to be the ones stepped on, and they've already been stepped on. So now they feel like they have no choice but to boost themselves up by stepping on the next people.
Yeah, I like what you said, Violet and Hannah. It's like the perfect representation of capitalism. And I think to me, that's why, like, you know, pointing out that it is a pyramid scheme, even though like the definitions do like differ in like having a product and stuff. But I feel like that, because I think of like high school cheerleaders, and I think of how the person on the top of the pyramid on the high school cheerleading squad is like the girl, the it girl gets to go on the top of the pyramid. And all those other people, no one pays attention to them, but they make up all the foundation so that the top person can succeed. And I feel like just that image really goes to show like how often we use in social justice, like pyramids to represent things. They really do a good job. But yeah, I really agree with what both of you said. I think it is a jarring fact. And it's crazy too to hear it, because you're like, how can all these people keep getting involved? And I think that's the question, because, you know, this fact, and we know it, and I think a lot of us know it, and I think people even who are in them know it. So that's why I want to talk about the next thing. So I want to shift a little bit and talk about girl boss feminism, or hashtag girl boss, hashtag boss babe. So I can see Hannah's face already. She probably has a lot to say. And I do too. So I've already defined it earlier in the episode. So now I just want to talk about like our own personal experiences and personal anecdotes. And yeah, Hannah, do you want to go first?
Yes, I'm laughing right now, as Randy can see. Before our session, I was telling Randy and Violet that just hearing girl boss or seeing hashtag girl boss really grinds my gears, because it's unreal how many people fall for that, and it's part of their persona. I don't know where to begin. If I were to define girl boss feminism, it is a very, I'd say like quasi-feminist liberation fantasy, which leaves out women of color. Like, it's, girl boss feminism is white feminism, and it's hella problematic. It reminds me of the 2016 American elections, I'd say. It's like, oh, Hillary is gonna change the face of America, or like basically whatever is wrong with America, Hillary can fix it. No, she's not gonna fix it. She's also a warmonger. She's part of the system. She's part of the problem. So the idea is that I don't have problems with just male bosses. I have problem with power itself, right? So you're just changing the face, but it's the same system and it's corrupt. So the problem, yeah. So like just the idea of something else I see with girl boss feminism is that it's always conflated as social justice. And that's so insidious. It's easy to fall for it, right? It's like, oh yeah, like feminism. I'm a feminist. I believe in that. I'll buy your product, or I will support your brand. But it's so self-serving, and they're not here to actually make a difference or talk about feminism or uplift women of color or other marginalized folks, right? And it's something that I saw this summer that I always talk about. It was just, it's so funny. So Lululemon, it's you know, like how sometimes we have no choice but to look at capitalist brands to do social justice work, which is obviously ironic. But I was passing by one of the big stores of Lululemon, and then they had these hashtags outside their store. So the first one was Black Lives Matter. The second one was No, All Children Matter. And the third was Stop Asian Hate, and it's like pick a lane. And the fourth one was like cut out because they didn't have space on their billboard. And so just kind of like virtue signaling that, yeah, we're woke, but are you really woke kind of thing. Yeah, but I'm curious what you have to say, Violet.
Yeah, I think the term girl boss to me has just become so ironic. So I kind of get confused now when I see people posting about it or saying it. I can't always like decipher if they're being serious or not. And I have a class with this girl, and I was really getting along with her. We were workshopping each other's pieces, you know, whatever. And I was telling my friend that I, you know, who's also in the class, I was like, oh, I really like this girl. She was like, yeah, I had a Zoom class with her, and she had this big frame picture that just said girl boss in the background of her like Zoom screen. And I was like, is it ironic? Like, I don't know. Is it real? I could see someone ironically doing that, but I guess I could also see someone unironically doing that. So it's very interesting to decipher. But yeah, I think that, you know, girl boss was intended, I guess, to be created as some form of liberation for women. But really what it's saying is, you can become just like a white man, and you can, you know, you can have that power and that financial status and that social status. You can be a girl boss. You can be, you know, you can exploit people and be a part of this capitalist system too, which I don't think is empowering or liberating at all. And I totally agree, Hannah, that it definitely leaves women of color in the dust. And that's not good for anyone, you know. I can never get behind something that or a movement that will allow some people to thrive and still support the oppression of others. So yeah.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Let me refresh your memory. Russians. That's right. Russians, Ruskies, communists, communists. Oh, now you remember.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Russian Tim, and I'm the host of weekly punk rock radio show called Rocket from Russia. Every Tuesday, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., Rocket from Russia is aired on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, or CITR.ca, anywhere where internet is paid for. On On the show, I play new, local and international punk rock, and I also do interviews with members of punk bands and people from the punk rock scene. If you'd like to check out the previous interviews, episodes of Rocket from Russia, and the list of upcoming shows in Vancouver, head down to my blog, rocketfromrussia.tumblr.com. Great success!
Yeah, one thing that I was reading about the hashtag girl boss, and it's so interesting how it just became, it is part of our language, right? And it was coined by, I think her name's Sophia, I forget her last name, but she's the CEO of Nasty Girl, the company, and also the woman in the, Her biopic was made and is on Netflix. It's also called Girl Boss. And I watched it like a few years ago, and I don't know, I didn't really think too much about it. But like now I just can't think. I just can't help but be like, yeah, that show was like so full of shit, you know? And it's really just individualizing everybody's struggle. It's like, oh, you weren't hustling hard enough. You weren't doing rise and grind. You could be like me as well, but not really talking about the systemic barriers that people face, people of color face, marginalized folks face, or people who are impoverished. And so it's a capitalist trap, basically is what it is. And one thing that, yeah, so something that's not talked about is like, these girl boss companies, I was reading, a lot of them have very toxic workplaces. They are predatory. They have poor labor conditions. And that's not something that they're going to ever talk about. That's not ever talked about. And it's just that one shiny girl boss that we're going to see. But all the people who are making it happen don't matter. And yeah, exactly. That's how they thrive, right?
Yeah, I think what you've both mentioned is like the correlation again between capitalism and girl boss feminism. And I think that to me is why I always say the term girl boss feminism, because it points out that like this is a very specific group, like package of feminism, of white feminism. And I think it's, you can't separate it. Like people try to be like, oh, I'm a feminist and I'm a girl boss. It's like, no, because those ideals of you being a girl boss are going to influence how you want to, you know, I don't know, contribute or like how you experience your feminism and how you do your social justice work. If you're intrinsically linking it to capitalism. But I think that brings up the connection between girl boss feminism and MLMs, because again, they're both these things that are so intertwined with capitalism. They're both things that, you know, are easily targeted towards these, you know, middle class white women, you know, living maybe stay at home moms, or like that are lonely, move to a like a different town, like all of these things. It becomes very appealing because I think someone mentioned this earlier, like who doesn't want to be their own boss? So why not just be a boss, but hey, you're a girl, so be a girl boss. And yeah, so I think it just shows that really strong connection. So I just, with that, I want to talk about the question of, do you think the blame can be placed on women that are involved in MLMs? So to preface this, like, although MLMs target everyone to be in their downlines, it is predominantly women that are both the people buying the stuff, I believe, and then also the people that are involved as distributors. So do you think there can be blame placed on them, who then these women go and target other women to join, and again, the downline just keeps going? Or do you think it's more important, again, when we talked about the pyramid, to focus on who's at the top? Yeah, so I just want to talk about that.
We shouldn't be blaming the victims, right? They are also being exploited and sold this fantasy and this illusion. Of course, we should be holding the folks the higher ups accountable and just critiquing the structure in general, because that's constructive and conducive to change, just to bringing about a change. But also, having said that, it's really important to educate and inform, especially I'd say like women and femmes who are targets, right? To be like, hey, like be wary if you get such a message. And I'm seeing that rise, this big like anti-MLM movement on YouTube, which is great, but I can see it can sometimes their approach isn't the most productive when they're blaming women or like say a stay at home mom for joining because they didn't know any better. Like Randy and I shared, we knew our mom's friends who were part of it and we don't know it was an MLM, you know. So definitely like the educated form and empower thing is like very true, because you're being set up for failure and you're gonna get crushed by someone in this like dog eat dog world kind of situation.
Yeah, I agree. And I like that we all have kind of this awareness that we've brought into the conversation about who exactly is being targeted here. And I had watched an interview clip with someone who was a part of an MLM who spoke about her experience. And she talked about how she was a single mom and she went ahead and targeted people like her because she knew that they were vulnerable. And they were in a similar position and they were kind of desperate and they were willing to sign on to this proposition that seemed too good to be true, but they didn't really have the luxury of, or they didn't feel as though they had the luxury to reject it. And I think that's a really important thing to consider of the people who are being targeted and also the people who are signing on and agreeing to do this. I don't think that they go into it wanting to exploit people, but I think once they're in it, they realize that's what they need to do. And I would hope that, you know, people could pull themselves out of it, but I imagine it's really hard. And another kind of tactic that I was reading about, and I don't know if all MLMs do this or maybe just some, but I know that there is kind of a tendency to go to conferences encouraging you in the work that you're doing for the MLM. Yourself from them to cut them off, and then that kind of just creates the community within the MLM environment, which I can only imagine is extremely isolating and toxic, and you don't have anyone looking from the outside who's able to come to you and tell you, hey, you know, I don't think this is healthy for you, or I don't think this is good, and you just have the people in the same position as you, and that's incredibly hard to break out of, especially now. Maybe you are socially isolated from your friends and family, and this is your new family and friends and community. It's really hard to walk away from something like that. So I do truly believe that the people indoctrinated into the MLMs are victims in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I think about so much, like the vulnerability that's being targeted. Like I've had times in my life when I took a gap year, I was so lonely. Like I could not make friends. Like I wasn't in school, like meeting new people was hard. And so I really believe there are so many people out there that it's difficult to make friends. I mean, we talk about it living in Vancouver. It's like a well-known fact that it's like impossible to make friends in Vancouver. People talk about it all the time. I constantly get TikToks where it's like, how do you make friends in Vancouver? How do you make friends in Vancouver? And I feel like that, like if we're talking about like root causes of things, like that's part of it. Like, is this feeling of like loneliness and separation, and that like, it's, we don't talk about it. And like this idea that like, you know, it's hard to make friends, and it definitely is hard to make friends. I literally can't imagine how I would be making friends if not for the university. Every single person that I know in Vancouver, I have met through the university. And yeah, so I think just like targeting that vulnerability is just, it's so sad to me, because these women are out here looking for relationships, looking for friendships. You know, there's so many anecdotes out there of them talking about, you know, I thought this person was my friend. I invited them to, you know, this party I was having. And then when I rejected their offer, then they quit talking to me. So I feel like it's so, so toxic because, yeah, like they're vulnerable and they're being targeted. So kind of my last question to round out this whole conversation, I personally believe that the only way forward in the future is to eliminate all MLMs. I don't see a future for myself that includes MLMs. I think that, I also don't see a future with capitalism, but that's a different conversation. But yeah, so I just want to talk a bit about, like, do MLMs have any place in our society?
I would say hopefully not. I would love to see MLMs disappear, but I think they make a lot of sense that they do exist right now. And it's hard to imagine, you know, the people at the top of the MLMs are definitely not going to be giving up that power anytime soon. I would hope that there could just be more awareness just from the general public of being informed on what MLMs are and how they might be a scam and why maybe you shouldn't join one. And hopefully if you can take away that base, they can kind of disappear altogether. But I don't know that there is that general awareness. I feel like there is that general awareness in some of the circles that I run in, but maybe not on a broader sense because people are still continuing to sign up for them. And I think a lot of times they're not marketing themselves necessarily as an MLM, because if you Google that, you might get some negative results. And so I think they thrive off of a bit of ignorance. And so I think the path to kind of aiding that is just more general awareness.
Yeah, so I would agree with you. Should MLMs exist? No. It reminds me of Audre Lorde's quote where she says the master's tool will never dismantle the master's house, and it's really that, right? And it also leans into our hashtag girl boss feminism and MLMs and all that. But unfortunately, I am not optimistic that they would cease to exist. And we live in a culture of exploitation, and I just really hope that there is more awareness and more information about there. And it's awesome that this is being talked about and that we're talking about it here. And I'll say I learned a lot in this process. And yeah, we all have exposure to it wherever we live in the world, and we just don't know. And so having more engaged conversations about it and like just talking about it more openly, because that's how MLMs operate, separating people and operating on the prisoner's dilemma mindset, right? Oh, also, sorry, I should correct. I was talking about the CEO of Nasty Girl. Her name is Sophia Amoruso, and she's the one who coined the term girl boss.
Awesome, yeah. I completely agree. I would dream of a world without them. I agree with you, Violet. It makes so much sense in the capitalist system that we have that they thrive. They're like a symbiotic relationship. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've taken biology, but I think that's what it is. But yeah, thank you so much both for joining me today. I really enjoyed this conversation. It was great to hear some other perspectives on this, aside from me just doing my own research. So yeah, thank you both for joining me.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us. I really enjoyed having this conversation and also going into the conversation, pushing me to do a bit more of my own research instead of just having a broader kind of understanding of it from a distance. It was really enlightening.
For sure. Yeah. Thanks for this, for initiating this. And this was so fun. And it gave me a chance to not just get mad about hashtag girl boss, but to actually see why it exists and have some empathy for those women.
This episode of Intersections is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Radio Meters program.
Thank you for listening to Intersections, presented by the Gender Empowerment Collective. Tune in again in 4 weeks to catch our next episode. We can always be reached at our email, genderempowerment@citr.ca, for comments, feedback, and topic ideas. Music by Hero.